Aung San Suu Kyi is always confident in herself, and she is confident in her cause and confident in the people.
Aung San Suu Kyi's attorney finally talking with his client before a court appearance. This is Tuesday, May 25th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, a new report further questions the origin of COVID-19. A dog smelling dirty socks could help identify those with COVID. India's overall death toll from COVID-19 crosses 300,000 on Monday. And the city that never sleeps is waking up. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Myanmar leader Aung San Suu Kyi Monday voiced defiance as she made her first court appearance since being detained in a coup, vowing her ousted political party would live on. Myanmar has been in uproar since the February 1st military takeover, with near-daily protest and a nationwide civil disobedience movement. More than 800 people have been killed by the military, according to a local monitoring group. The junta has threatened to dissolve Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy, which swept elections in 2020 over alleged voter fraud. During a 30-minute meeting, her lawyer, Min Min So, told AFP that she sounded healthy and fully competent. Local media reports that fighters opposed to Myanmar's military junta fought with troops in the east of the country Sunday and claimed to have killed more than 13 members of the security forces, captured four, and destroyed a police station. VOA Steve Miller spoke with reporter Cape Diamond in Yangon to get the details and the military junta's reaction.
They're hearing the continuous explosion and, of course, the shootings in different cities and different states in the country. And the last one is the one that in Mopier, which is in southern Shan State, and which is, of course, in between the Shan State and Gaya State. So the local defense force, we call it People Defense Force. And according to the local media report, 15 members of the troops killed and the four captured alive by the local force. At the same time, you know, not only in that region, but also in the other different area of the country is having the fighting between the People Defense Force and the State Administration Council, the military troops. And they have seized, you know, a bunch of the weapon as well, according to the local report.
Cape, as you mentioned, these are local reports based on information from the People's Defense Forces and other groups. What has the military junta said in response to these latest reports?
Well, so far as we know, that there has been no response, like official report from, like official response from the junta on these specific cases on their state media. You know, they have been spreading the news about the cases that they have been detained, and mostly the ones that, you know, they detained for relating to the explosion cases in the cities like Yangon and Mandalay. So, but in terms of this specific case, we don't really see any response from the junta yet.
Cape, I wanted to switch gears for just a second. Over the weekend, the military junta said that it is considering revoking the registration of the National League for Democracy Party, the party of Aung San Suu Kyi and President Win Myint, because of what the junta alleges is voting fraud during last year's contest. Have they been able to produce proof to support their allegations?
They said, you know, they have found the election fraud, and they have a number of the cases that, you know, being allegedly accused the National League for Democracy is cheating, you know, the election. And they have been, you know, announcing their own results, what they have based on what they have found. But what they have found are not being independently confirmed by the, you know, independent organization or the independent, you know, election observer.
VOA Steve Miller speaking with reporter Cape Diamond in Yangon. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Samoa's Prime Minister-elect is barred from Parliament, unable to officially take office. Taiwan was not invited to World Health Body's annual meeting and says it's because the WHO has given in to pressure from China. China probes the death of 21 runners after freak weather hits the ultramarathon there. Japan's Osaka crumbles under COVID-19 onslaught. Afghan war displaced settle in the ruins of a lost city. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Three researchers from China's Wuhan Institute of Virology sought hospital care in November of 2019, months before China disclosed the COVID-19 pandemic, that according to the Wall Street Journal on Sunday, citing a previously undisclosed U.S. intelligence report. Jason Albano reports.
A new report in the Wall Street Journal has added fuel to a theory over where the coronavirus came from. On Sunday, the newspaper cited a previously undisclosed U.S. intelligence report. They say three researchers from China's Wuhan Institute of Virology got sick and sought hospital care in November 2019, months before China disclosed the COVID-19 pandemic. That report goes beyond the State Department fact sheet from January, which said that the symptoms of the researchers were consistent with, quote, both COVID-19 and common seasonal illness. Debate as to the origins of the virus began even before the health crisis became a global one. The Trump White House asserted that it escaped from Wuhan's virus lab. Beijing has consistently denied this. In response to Sunday's article, China's foreign ministry called the news hype from the U.S. and accused it of trying to divert attention. It reiterated that a WHO-led team investigating the pandemic's origins said a lab leak was extremely unlikely after a visit. In March, however, countries including the U.S., Canada, and the U.K. expressed concern about the WHO's investigations. A U.S. National Security Council spokeswoman had no comment on the journal's report, though she said Washington was working with the WHO and other member states to support an expert-driven evaluation of the pandemic's origins, quote, free from interference or politicization.
Jason Albano reporting. Findings in this year's World Health Statistics report suggest the true number of global deaths attributed to COVID-19 is probably 2 to 3 times higher than those officially documented. The report provides the latest data on more than 50 health-related UN Sustainable Development Goals and regional health trends. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
As of December 31st, 2020, 3.4 million COVID-related deaths have been officially reported to the World Health Organization. But based on excess deaths since the pandemic began, WHO officials believe the official figure represents a significant undercount and that the true number is at least 2 to 3 times higher. WHO data analyst William Samburi says the organization is working with other UN agencies to quantify both the direct and indirect impacts of COVID-19.
Direct incorporates the reported COVID deaths, as well as those COVID deaths that were missed because people died without testing. And what I mean by indirect, these are the deaths that can be attributed to the difficult conditions that many people in the world are living under because of the pandemic. These conditions have made patients avoid healthcare, which has increased deaths and other causes.
Samburi says the pandemic has taken a severe socioeconomic toll, resulting in increases in diseases like depression. He says treating COVID emergency patients has taken priority over those suffering from other diseases. The report finds the pandemic has disrupted health services for many life-threatening diseases and poses major threats to health and well-being beyond the dangers of COVID-19 itself. WHO Assistant Director General in the Division of Data and Analytics, Samira Azma, says prior to COVID-19, life expectancy was going up.
We made great strides in global life expectancy. which was increasing with gains in healthy life expectancy as well. Yet the pandemic has had a deleterious impact on these gains, and we are learning from several countries already that life expectancy has declined by 2 to 3 years.
The statistics report says global life expectancy at birth increased from 66.8 years in 2000 to 73.3 years in 2019, with healthy life expectancy up from 58.3 to 63.67 years prior to the pandemic. Greatest gains were made in low-income countries. It notes global tobacco use is down by 33% since 2000, but adult obesity is rising, affecting one quarter of populations in wealthy countries. It says non-communicable diseases account for 7 of 10 causes of global deaths. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Happening now in Asia, Thailand will extend the gap between the first and second doses of AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccine to 16 weeks, an effort to inoculate more people faster, according to a senior health officials. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are happy you're with us on VOA Asia. British scientists said Monday that sniffer dogs trained using smelly socks worn by people infected with COVID-19 could soon be used at airports or mass gathering venues to pick up the corona odor of COVID-19 infected people. Working in teams of two, the COVID-trained dogs could screen a line of several hundred people coming off a plane within half an hour, for example, and detect with up to 94.3% sensitivity those infected, according to the scientists. Presenting results of an early-stage study which involves some 3,500 odor samples donated in the form of unwanted socks or T-shirts worn by members of the public and health workers, the researchers said the dogs were even able to sniff out asymptomatic or mild COVID-19 cases, as well as cases caused by a mutant variant that emerged in the UK late last year. Steve Lindsay is a professor at Durham University's Department of Biosciences who worked on the study.
We were interested in developing a rapid and accurate test for COVID. And our previous work with using dogs showed that we were able to detect people with malaria by their scent. So we thought, well, at the beginning of the pandemic, let's see whether our dogs could detect people with COVID by their smell.
The dogs in the UK study were trained over several weeks by being introduced to 200 odor samples from people who had tested positive for COVID-19, as well as 200 control samples from people who tested negative. Out of 10 people with COVID, the dogs would be able to pick out 9 on average, so that's really quite a high level of precision, said Lindsay. Independent experts cautioned that the findings would need to be replicated in real-world situations.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. An American editor of a news site in military-ruled Myanmar was detained on Monday as he attempted to take a flight out of the country, according to his news organization. His employer says he is the third foreign journalist held since a coup in February. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. India's overall death toll from COVID-19 crossed 300,000 on Monday as it reported 4,454 deaths over the past 24 hours. More from correspondent Libby Hogan.
India's total COVID-19 death toll crossed 300,000 on Monday. The country is trying desperately to save its scarce supply of vaccines by delaying shots for those who have recovered from the disease. The head of a government panel said on Sunday, those who have had the disease should wait 3 months before receiving a vaccine, instead of the prior 1 month recommendation. Under scrutiny for his handling of the world's worst rise in coronavirus cases, Prime Minister Narendra Modi made all adults eligible for vaccination earlier this month. Meanwhile, the capital Delhi will start relaxing its strict lockdown if new cases continue to drop, the chief minister said. Delhi has been under lockdown since April 20th, but daily cases have declined in recent weeks after peaking on May 9th. Other states remain in lockdown, including Jammu and Kashmir in the north, where door-to-door style testing has been ramped up in rural areas. The world's largest vaccine-producing nation has fully vaccinated just over 41 million people as of Sunday, around just 4% of its population.
That was Reuters' Libby Hogan. The Australian government is being urged to offer citizens cash and lottery tickets as incentives to boost slow rates of COVID-19 vaccinations. Public health and advertising experts say more needs to be done to counter mounting hesitancy and confusion about a mass inoculation program. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has more.
Research commissioned by two Australian newspapers found a third of respondents don't intend to get vaccinated soon. There are community-wide doubts about potential side effects of vaccines. The survey has also shown that many Australians believe there's no rush to receive a dose, while the country's international borders remain closed. Demand for injections has been far lower than expected. At the current pace of about 500,000 doses a week, Australia's adult population wouldn't be fully vaccinated until October 2022. But the authorities are warning that complacency can kill, pointing to the resurgence of this deadly virus in countries like Taiwan, Singapore and South Korea, which, like Australia, had appeared to have suppressed community spread of COVID-19. Australia's federal government recently responded to hesitancy about the vaccines with a new public health campaign.
COVID-19 vaccines continue to roll out to those most at risk. People aged 50 and over can now have the vaccine. It's voluntary, free, and the best way to protect you and your community. Our therapeutic
experts believe that offering Australians lottery tickets or cash after being vaccinated could boost injection rates. Similar measures, along with free beer and donuts, have been used in other countries, including the United States, where critics said vaccine payments might unfairly exploit people who've lost jobs during the pandemic. A major incentive for Australians could be linked to overseas travel. Officials have said the reopening of international borders, which have been closed for more than a year, could be dependent on high rates of coronavirus vaccinations. Julian Savulescu is a bioethicist at the Murdoch's Children's Research Institute in Melbourne. He says Australians need to be actively encouraged to get the jab.
You can provide them with things that clearly are benefits to them, such as cash or kind. So kind being, you know, greater ability to travel, not having to wear masks in certain situations. So the US has dropped mask requirements for people who have been vaccinated, or provide them with cash, you know, and money does talk, and it may well influence significant numbers of people.
Tough border control measures, strict lockdowns and mass testing have helped Australia to contain COVID-19. Cases of community transmission are now rare, but on Monday, state health authorities in Victoria reported two likely positive cases in the city of Melbourne. Australia has diagnosed over 30,000 coronavirus infections since the pandemic began, and 910 people have died, according to the latest government statistics. Regulators have so far approved two vaccines for use in Australia, the Pfizer-BioNTech treatment and the Oxford AstraZeneca drug. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Mm-hmm. Making headlines in Asia, Indian authorities began evacuating thousands of people from coastal areas in two states Monday as a powerful cyclone bore down on the country's east coast. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. The city that never sleeps is finally staying up after 14 months of being mostly closed for indoor dining due to the coronavirus. No other city in the United States was hit as hard as New York, and the Big Apple's nightlife reopening is a sign of hope for many worldwide. Tina Trent reports.
There was lots to celebrate on a recent Friday night in New York City. For the first weekend since the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic, bars and restaurants opened with no mask restrictions for vaccinated people.
We got hit pretty hard during the pandemic, so it's great to see everyone's out, everyone's friendly, everyone's having fun.
Other milestones? Indoor dining is now allowed at 100% capacity, and the subways have resumed 24-hour service. It was a big difference from a year ago when Christina Albert moved to the city.
It was a ghost town, and to see New York City come back to life, especially Midtown and the Theater District, I am super excited.
Inside this Hell's Kitchen restaurant, Daniel Arcia, a teacher, had some choice words for those who skipped town.
I just want to say that all the people who left New York, suckers, we are back.
More than 3.4 million New Yorkers, about 41%, are fully vaccinated with a coronavirus vaccine.
The beauty of New York is like we're still wearing masks when it's necessary. We are trying to balance, you know, like having fun and taking care of each other.
It's starting to feel a little bit more normal. So we're happy to see that. It's definitely from like lonely to back to, you know, having family in your living room.
For Anton Derrett, chef and owner of Filipino restaurant Tradition, the timing couldn't be better.
We opened up a week before the lockdown in 2020. And we were forced to shut down our doors.
On this night, there was an hour wait for a table.
I got a full table right here. I got a line outside the door, people walking by, you know. The energy of New York is coming back.
I'm thankful that it's coming back. My bar is thankful it's coming back. My staff is definitely thankful it's coming back.
Jarrett Major, general manager of Bar 9, had improvised with outdoor seating and stages for the live music venue. But on this night, it felt like old times. Over at Cuban restaurant Guantanamera, owner Mario Zarate was also tending to a full house.
I never doubted that New York will come back. New York going to rebound, and it could be better than before.
After more than a year of restrictions, New Yorkers are once again proving they're the city that never sleeps. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
We continue on VOA Asia. Alaska-bound cruise ships could soon sail once again now that U.S. lawmakers in both houses of Congress have voted to allow cruises to bypass Canada. The measure is awaiting President Joe Biden's signature. Craig McCulloch reports from Vancouver that large cruises have been barred from Canadian ports during the pandemic.
The legislation temporarily sets aside the Passenger Services Vehicle Act of 1886, which has long mandated that cruise ships stop in Canada en route to Alaska. The stipulation was never a problem until the COVID-19 pandemic struck, and Canada banned any passenger vessels carrying over 100 people from docking until at least February of 2022. Without congressional action, Alaska was looking at a canceled cruise ship season for the second consecutive year. For Canada's westernmost province, British Columbia, the prospect of being bypassed by cruise ships is devastating news. Historically, Alaska-bound cruises originate or visit Vancouver or Victoria, bringing more than $2 billion annually to the region before the pandemic. Walt Judas, CEO of the Travel Industry Association of British Columbia, fears the temporary workaround might become permanent.
And that's where the real concern lies. Cutting crews out of the BC market would be catastrophic to the visitor economy and communities in general.
In 2019, Vancouver saw 288 cruise ship visits. Judas is urging the Canadian government to either lift the ban on cruise ship dockings or modify it to permit technical stops for refueling and loading provisions without allowing passengers to disembark. So far, the Canadian government has not responded. Craig McCulloch for VOA News.
Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, Amy Heibels, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman. Stay safe and enjoy your day ahead.